Plato, in the Republic, relates, a philosopher cannot look with the objectiveness of a painter's eye at absolute truth. For as we begin observing, we begin changing absolute, and to change the absolute cannot be done. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the absolute philosopher. Plato in the Republic relates, a philosopher cannot look with the objectiveness of a painter's eye at absolute truth. For as we begin observing, we begin changing absolute, and it cannot be done. Think about what a painter does. A painter looks at circumstances that are around him, and as the painter looks at them, he gets a feeling in his heart. He gets an idea in his mind, and then he wants to put that idea on canvas. When he's done, you may not recognize at all what he has done, because it's something that he has objectified, something that he has interpreted, and something that he's doing. But this is what always happens with a writer, with a painter, with a poet, with a musician, no matter what. If the musician who hears celestial music in his mind, and we find it hard to perceive rock and roll being celestial music, but as the musician hears music in his mind, he interprets that music to be what he wants it to be. And in one of the movies we watched the other day, the music teacher was showing the class how the creative imagination of artists took the masterpieces of great musicians and turned them into current day music. And if you were to say to the kids, you like Beethoven or you like Mozart, they'd say, oh, come on, that's not cool. Chill out, you know. And what the teacher did, he played the rock and roll music, or he played the hard metal music for them, and they recognized, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, but he was heavy on the music itself, on the theme. And so then, later, moments later, he played it again with the lilt of the original composer, with the genuineness and the sensitiveness and the quietness and the strongness of the original composer. And, oh my God, the same stuff. And people don't realize it. People don't realize that the music of the great composers is some of the universal music, the universal phraseology of music. And anyone can indeed put that to their own lyrics and to their own beat, you might say, and come up with something that represents them. However, when you deal with something like absolute, this doesn't allow for that sort of an artist or a poet's license, as they say, because absolute is unchangeable, and yet everything in the human world is constantly changing. Absolute is always the same, it's always consistent with itself, and it cannot be in any way interpreted, because there's nothing to interpret. We speak, and we have spoken about it often now in our evening lectures here on Absolute Philosopher, and we have said time and again that the concept of an idea is something that is not changeable. The concept of an idea is always the same. And what we interpret ourselves in hearing is a translation or a way of transcribing it, or what would I want to say, a way of looking at it in other eyes, as the musicians looked at it in their other eyes, in their other attitudes. They looked at it from the point of view of the music that struck their soul. Now, it's the same music that Mozart had used, and Beethoven and Bach had used, but with the beat that they had changed it to, and with the emphasis that they put on different notes, it seemed like an entirely different piece. When you look at a house, as we spoke the other night, a house is a house is a house. Now, does a house have doors in it, walls in it, windows in it, floors in it, ceiling in it, roof on it? Does it have a basement? No. Ingeborg, what is a house?
A house is a building, a construction.
Please. Please. A house is a place where people live. Now, that's what we said the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to learn to be consistent. If you say something one time, stand up for it another time. You see, the teachings of the University of Philosophy are consistent. They are continuously the same. If I give lectures on the law of cause and effect, if I give lectures on spiritual illumination, if I give lectures on healing, whatever I speak on, my terminology and my concepts are always the same. Why? Answer me the question, please, quickly. Why are the concepts always the same?
The original.
The concepts are always the same because this is what we teach. This is not the truth, but this is what we teach. It's our understanding of healing, our understanding of spiritual awareness. Now, can we say ever that we have the truth? And the answer is no. The truth can only be interpreted and understood in whatever you're referring to. I want you to tell me the truth about the car that hit the tree. Well, you can't. And then you and you and 100 people standing around that same car, the same tree, each saw something different. Now, it objectively was only one incident that took place. A car hit a tree. Someone died or did not die. Someone was injured or was not injured. The tree fell over or the tree stood up. The car was ruined or the car was not ruined. You see, whatever the case was, whatever the police report, you might say, reported, that theoretically is what happened. But even the police report cannot be correct. Can you tell me why the police report cannot be correct?
It's subjective.
It is something that they were told by someone else, or what they drew as an idea from what they saw. They saw the tree, they saw the car with its bumper pushing the tree over, and they said the car hit the tree and knocked it over. But what they didn't know was that a car came along 5 minutes before, hit the tree, knocked it over, and then pulled off and drove away. And so when this new car came along and hit the tree, no one had seen it happen before, and they thought that car had indeed knocked over the tree. And the driver said, but I did not knock over the tree. I hit the tree, I agree, but it was already knocked over. Oh, come on now, your bumper is at exactly the same location where it has been hit and where it was knocked over. What are you trying to tell us? Are you drunk, you know? Are you on drugs or something? Are you unstable? And the guy says, but no. And now, 5 minutes later, the fellow who hit the tree in the first place is coming back from where he was, and he sees all this crowd around the tree, and he stops and he listens to the conversation, and he realizes that he must take responsibility for what he did. And so he tells the officer, I'm sorry, but the guy is right. I hit the tree 5 minutes before and knocked it over, and it didn't hurt my car because I had this great big truck thing, you know, and it didn't disturb me at all. It was just like a little toothpick popped over, And so I just went on to the liquor store to buy some more beer. And so he proved to the officer that possibly he had done it. But now, maybe he didn't. Maybe he did that because it was his father who hit the tree. And his father would lose his license if he were found to be incompetent and incapable of handling the car properly. And so then he admitted to doing it, so his father would be off the hook. And so then, you know, who knows what ramifications are there. But you see, with absolute, there are no subjective, objective viewpoints. There's only the is. There's only whatever it is. Now, Ingeborg, how would you describe a house?
A house is a building, has normally four walls.
Stop it. A house is a place where people live. A house is a place where people live. Now, it can be an outhouse. What's that for?
It is for making the...
It's a toilet.
Yeah.
Thank you. We really don't need to have the more deep discussion than that. Now, what is a brick house? Quite likely a house where people live. What is a great big mansion? A house where people live. Its size, its dimensions, its quality and structure doesn't make it any different. A house is a place where people live. Now, what is a home? Is a home a house? No. A home could be anything. Do you know where the rabbits live? Do you know where the rabbits have their home? They have a hole in the ground. They have a little hutch sometimes they live in. So, you see, a home has a different definition. A home is where people live and where they share love and where they're happy, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's a house. So you see, we're dealing with all these variables. And when we deal with these variables, what we're doing when we're dealing with the variables, we are moving away from absolute. And so, like it says here, Plato in the Republic relates, a philosopher cannot look at objectiveness with the objectiveness of a painter's eye at absolute truth. For as we begin observing absolute truth, we begin changing absolute, and it cannot be done. How would you describe absolute? How would I describe absolute? How would anyone describe absolute? The allness, the isness, the totality of everything, the completeness. It all depends on what level of relativity you're speaking on. And if you're speaking on absolute, which is not the relativity level, then you're speaking of something that cannot be described. For how do you describe an is? How do you describe an atom? And you see, you start describing an atom as the molecules that make it up, the various aspects of, and that's not it. The atom is more than that. The atom is a life energy that is constantly in motion. It's constantly moving. And would anyone say that the atom was life? Generally, no. They would not think of the atom as being life. They would think of it as being an objective concept, you know. But is the atom within the helium or hydrogen or oxygen or water? Are those atoms all the same? And yes, they are. The ideal atom, the archetypal atom, the absolute atom, atom, is all the same. Because it is only when you put them into a compounded form that they change. And it's only when you compound anything that you make it human. And we have made things human by compounding them, and we have tried to keep their absolute concept, and we cannot do that. Because the concept is lost once you describe it outside of its absolute definition, if it has one. What is an atom? What is a house? What is a car? What is a drop of water? What is anything at all you want to say? And if you're going to speak of it in its absolute form, then what are you going to come up with? You're not going to come up with the multifaceted words and phrases that are oftentimes used to describe any given object. If you say house, and in your mind and heart you mean a house like you grew up in, then that's one in a million. And if you say dog, and you're speaking of the dog that you love and dearly care about, then that's one in even a greater number. But we cannot do that. What do we mean when we say archetypal dog? We say pet, lovable, desirable, you know, if you can even say those things. But you see, it has nothing to do with the fact that it's a dog, it's canine, it's this and that and the other. It is just a concept. So I would say, let's us begin to think in the terms of concept, and think in the terms of how Plato spoke about these things, and why he was so correct when he said that the objectiveness of a painter's eye cannot see absolute truth. For as we begin observing, we change absolute truth. And to change absolute truth cannot be done. Think on these things, if you like. They are a charming concept of absolutely no value, but it's just interesting from our intellectual point of view if we can cool it enough to get down to the fundamental and realize that we have never known, nor will we ever know, absolute. Because once we know absolute, if we do, we won't know it. We are it, yeah, we are it, and we will not know relative through which to describe it. So have a lovely evening, and know I love you, I love you, I love you.